Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough. This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old, and like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy and we know him. Putting tunes up that'll keep you up. Glued to the screen like you do too much. The galaxy is ours, the sun and the stars. Toonami's on and chilling hard.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars as viewers awake the moment when the spirit bomb can charge. Hito, you.
Hey there, my generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Madison. This is episode 125 of The Prerogative. On this week's episode, it's time for a crossover because, hey, who doesn't love a crossover, especially when it's from two beloved franchises? On one hand, you have the Jerry Lewis speaking James Bond Robin Hood Bix and his gang of thieves hunting for a jewel. I'm, of course, talking about the famed Lupin III. On the other, you have the world's greatest detective in a compact-sized body. I'm talking about Detective Conan Arakawa. When these two forces meet, it's explosive, as this is Lupin III versus Detective Conan, the movie. Or, as Detective Conan would be known in America, case closed, because we can't use the name Conan, because somehow we will confuse a high schooler that's been shrunk into the body of a elementary schooler wearing glasses, detective with a big burly barbarian looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger on steroids. Yeah, no. Because people need their money. And further proving how effed up the American copyright system is. Corporate America, how we love thee. Not. But yes, Lupin III versus Detective Conan the movie. That is today's subject. And it's gonna be fun. We're gonna get more into Lupin III and Detective Conan in just a second as we prepare for the review. Just a couple quick things. Again, this is the second episode of Tom Prerogative I've gotten out in 2 weeks. I'm happy for that. Or at least about 2 weeks. And I do plan on getting one out before the end of January, or at least by the first day of February, I should say. But, and I'm working on that review. Again, we'll review what I'm reviewing the last week in a little bit. But one thing I have to admit to you, and now coming back, again, it was 5 months between episode 123 and 124. With animation, as much as I love animation, I think I've kind of lost focus, maybe lost some passion, which, you know, that sometimes happens in regards to whatever you're doing. I don't want to say I lost passion because I'm still passionate about animation. It's just as far as talking about it, and maybe it's also the way I do things, the way I feel I need to watch the entire series, and unfortunately, I'm now doing a lot of things that take up a lot of my time. I'm in college, and so, of course, that takes up time. And then, but more probably due to the fact that I let other things take over. I think I let video games take over. Sometimes I get in these kicks where I'm like, I'm just addicted to a game, and admittedly, that's more on me than anything else, so I do want to apologize for that. But one thing I'm excited for is one of my classes is on global animated film, so I'm going to be a lot focused on animation a lot more, and I'm hoping that leads to more focused on doing this podcast, because I really do absolutely love talking about animation. I love watching animation, and I love watching different things. As I think I made mention once before, I may be doing more movies, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it means that when I do a series, that series is special. As with G Gundam, as with next week's pick, which you'll see later on. So I just want to let you know that I am going to renew my focus for this particular podcast. I know I do a lot more, probably, and I've probably been also a lot more focused on my wrestling podcast, CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Which is hard because WWE and wrestling is just an exciting time right now. For those who are not wrestling fans, just to do a quick little history. For me, personally, it kind of feels like what the 1980s or mid-1980s were, when WWE was starting to rise, and what Vince McMahon was doing is he was able to draw wrestlers and take wrestlers from other organizations and just make an all-star cast. You know, he took Hulk Hogan from AWA, Dusty Rhodes from the South, Kerry Von Erich from World Class Championship Wrestling. And I understand for those who weren't wrestling fans, you may have no idea what I'm talking about, and I apologize. Again, I wasn't around then. I'm not that old. But I do know my history. Not that I was around then. I was only just born in 85. So when I was a really young kid, it was popping off. And it sort of feels like that same way now, because right now WWE, all these independent stars and everything, while along with great homegrown stars, are coming up. And it's this great thing alongside the WWE Network. So that's also taking my focus, and I apologize for that. Well, if you're listening to both, I hope you've enjoyed what I've done with CMG's. But yeah, I'm going to renew focus on this series, because I do love talking about animation. And the thing is, it allows me to watch great stuff like today's topic, which is Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan. I almost called it Case Closed. Because and that was initially how I remember it. But, you know, this is a great example of, you know, a key word that we're going to be using a lot today is fusion, along with the word blend. Because this is a great fusion or blend, shall I say, of two franchises. Two very successful franchises. And when you have these two successful franchises, sometimes you can allow one franchise to seem more important or better or bigger than the other. But one thing they do with this movie, and mind you, this movie follows a storyline that was set up in a television special that took place in 2009, this movie taking place in 2013, that they never let any one series be bigger than the other. It's like, it's a complete blend or fusion, as I used to say, of both franchises, where they feel like completely, they feel like they are paired together, like they work together so well. For those who never heard of these franchises, now of course I've reviewed Lupin the Third before. I did a review of the first Lupin the Third series. It's actually one of like the second season episodes I did. Not the second season of Lupin the Third, but my second season. It was a January episode. I can't remember the number, I apologize, but I want to say it's in the 50th range. But I did the first season. And I also believe that I've reviewed Lupin the Third Castle of Cagliostro, which is an absolutely excellent movie. It's one of Hayao Miyazaki's first movies, or at least one of his first big budget animated film, so there's that historical presence there, and it really is just a wonderful movie. But Lupin the Third, again, just created by Monkey Punch in the 1970s, has had animation adaptions from the late 70s onward, has seen a really big resurgence in recent years with some new series like Lupin the Third, A Woman Called Fujiko Mine, movies like Lupin the Third, Jigen's Greystone, and of course there's now the current new series of Lupin the Third, which takes place apparently, I believe, like completely in Italy, actually, that you can actually currently now watch on Crunchyroll. And the thing I love about the Lupin series is that it's just fun. It's that, you know, it's a heist series. It's all about them doing this heist. And, of course, what makes it work is the characters. Monkey Punch created these wonderful characters that work so well together and have great personality. You know, and that's something we'll be talking about a lot with this series, is the personality, and that's what makes these series work, and is what made these series have such long-standing power. You know, of course, Lupin, you know, it really is, the best way to describe him is he's James Bond, Robin Hood, and Jerry Lewis mixed together. He's like got James Bond's gadgets and sort of swag. He's got, you know, he's sort of Robin Hood personality, you know. Yeah, he's taking it for himself, but he does give back to the poor. But that Jerry Lewis sort of like, lady, like, oh. So, yeah, he's got that swag, that Jerry Lewis swag. And it's just a wonderful blend. Again, there's that key word again. And then, of course, the characters that surround him all, like, complement his personality with Jigen, with sort of that no-nonsense sort of sharpshooter, Goemon, the stoic samurai. And, of course, Fujiko Mine, probably one of the most beloved and most iconic anime female characters of all time. A super spy who leads men by their nose and just uses her charm to get whatever she wants. And just, she's a great example of a great, strong female character. Yeah, she has to be saved, but if you're only looking at that sometimes she has to be saved, you're missing why she has to be saved. That ultimately, sometimes her greed gets the best of her. And that's her character's downfall. You know, each of the individual characters have a small little downfall that is ultimately the reason why Lupin is the leader. So that's what makes the cast work so well. And then on the other hand, you have Detective Conan. Which I think has a really great concept. It takes the really simple idea of, here's a detective story, and yet we're going to put this overarching sort of backstory that's always looming in the background of things that we can go back to. And we'll touch on it here and there, and it allows so, you know, the franchise will never get boring because, yeah, we'll have a run where we're doing all these individual stories that have no meaning with that big main plot of the organization, but we can always go back to the organization. That's the big evil antagonist behind everything. Well, not everything, but a lot of things. And, of course, that what I'm talking about is the fact that, for those who don't know what Detective Conan is, again, like I said, it was brought over here in America as Case Closed, did have a run on Toonami, or at least I should say Adult Swim, as Lupin the Third had a run on Adult Swim, brought over by Funimation. It basically follows a young man by the name of, let me just, Conan, not Conan Ogawa, let me get rid of it, Kudo Shinji, or Shinji Kudo, of course, Americanization, it's Jimmy Kudo, but one day while at an amusement park with his girlfriend, after solving a mystery where a guy gets murdered on a roller coaster, he sees a man in black who also happened to be riding the roller coaster sneak off somewhere. He goes to investigate and sees a drug deal going down, only to be hit from behind by the man in black he was trying to investigate. They feed him this experimental poison that's supposed to kill him, but it instead shrinks his body to the size of a child. So now he goes by the name of Conan Ogawa and lives with his girlfriend Rachel, unknown unknowing his true identity, and her father, Richard, who is a detective, and helps them solve cases while trying to hunt down and take down the mysterious black organization. He develops other friends along the way. Of course, he has sort of his... He has a father and mother who are off on adventures. His father is a writer. His mother is an aspiring actress. He stays with sort of Dr. Sawa, sort of a parent for him, who's a doctor who like, lives with his family, takes care of him. In being that he's a child, he gets sent to elementary school, and he makes three friends who, along with him, form the Junior Detective Lead... League. And, of course, then there's also Sherry, which didn't get shown when the series was on Adult Swim, because the anime didn't make it to episode 77, but her name is Miyano Shiro. She was actually one of the inventors of the poison that turned Conan into a child. And trying to get away from the organization after they killed her sister and took the poison to commit suicide. But it turned her into a child as well, like it did Conan. So now she stays with him and the doctor and helps him take down the organization under the assumed name of Anita Haley. So you have all these great supporting characters, and again, they all provide different things, and the great thing about Detective Conan is it's each story is approached differently. Like, there are patterns, like, well, here's a story where we all know who did it, it's trying to figure out how he did it. So, like, there are some episodes where it's Law and Order, crime scene investigation. No, not crime scene. I'm mixing up my my detective shows. Which is the one that where they talk about they know they did and they gotta figure it out. Criminal Intent. That's what it was. Law and Order Criminal Intent. And then there are others where it's more the traditional of there's a murder or there's been a theft. A lot of times there's a murder, actually. This series can be very bloody. Not in, like, just blood everywhere, but, like, somebody's always dying. Which, again, is something I think very foreign to Americans for considering that this is actually a kid's series. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, in America, kids are, if nobody dies, they just get really bad boo-boos. In Japan, people die in kids' series. Because, again, Japan understands that kids can actually handle tough topics like somebody dying. You know, it's not like the, you know, hold their hand, don't show them the world, bubble them from everything that America has. But, yeah, so sometimes it's more like Criminal Intent where we know who did it and we gotta figure out how they did it. And then sometimes it's we don't know who did it. We know nothing. All we know is that a murder has happened or a theft has happened and we gotta figure out who did it. And the thing I like about that Detective Conan does is they show you the, they don't tell you that it's a clue. They will show you the clues, but you have to actually watch and pay attention if you want to figure out what happened, which you never do. And that's a great detective series that allows you the chance to figure it out, but you actually have to watch to figure it out. And then it comes to the reveal where, like, well, here's this, and this is what this did. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I see, wow. That's how they did it? It's, just to me, it's that whodunit and then figuring out how they did it, it adds a certain enjoyment to the series. And it's why this franchise that was created by... I want to get his name right. Gosho Oyama, in 1994, has had such staying power. I mean, this franchise has been going strong since 94. It's had 16 anime seasons. Actually, probably more than that. Probably reaching its 20th. I think it's actually reaching its 20th season. And because it's had 20 animated films, it had, I think the animation started, let me just double check on that. It will tell me right here. I actually have notes open. The manga started in 94. The anime started in 96. So, yeah, it's been going for 20 years. And it had a very well-established movie franchise that started in 97. And the 20th film is actually coming out this April. And the case, Detective Conan films are some of the best and most profitable anime films in Japan. In fact, Toho makes a lot of money to fund, again, if you know the system, like, there's the big budget films that will always make money that will fund all the smaller films. That's actually what Detective Conan is for Toho. So, it's this very long established franchise that has done extremely well. So the question then is, how do these two series do combined together? Well, let's find out, shall we? So, Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan the movie takes place in Tokyo, where Lupin the Third has returned to Japan to steal the Cherry Sapphire. Meanwhile, our beloved Conan Nagawa is thrust into a case where incoming famous young Italian pop singer Emilia Batari has gotten a threatening letter saying that if he performs, he's dead meat. What's especially worrying for him is that part of his entourage, as one of his guards, is one Daisuke Jigen of the famed Lupin the Third gang. How did these two stories meet? Well, let's just say that it's all in the jewels. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan, the movie. Welcome back, and let's get started. Yeah, that was a very different way I usually do my music, mostly doing the fact that I couldn't find the actual music to download anywhere. So, for first time ever, unique use of YouTube. This use of YouTube is not sponsored by YouTube by any other way. But let's actually get started the way we usually do, with music. And, of course, what you were actually listening to there was the actual theme music used. Actually, those are the ending credits, but those are the sort of two main themes of... Of course, the first one was Lupin the Third's theme. The second one was Detective Conan's theme. And that's actually used at the end credit scene. But also throughout the movie, they use those themes as well. Again, I really love the music in the movie entirely. I think they do a really good job of blending everything together. You know, again, you have sort of Lupin the Third's music is sort of more used in more comedic scenes. Definitely used in, like, the Lupin the Third scenes. And the Detective Conan scenes have music from its series there. But also, like, the type of music that's used. Like, Lupin the Third scenes, there's a lot more comedic scenes there. So there's a lot more use of the comedic music. In particular when, you know, you're talking about, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say is, when there's a scene where you have characters from both franchises, usually, like, the music from Lupin the Third will be more comedic, if I can say, like, for instance, there's a scene where you have Conan and Jigen are sitting at a bar, and the music is a bit more upbeat and sort of more comedic. It's jazz. Overall, it's a jazzy soundtrack. So that takes a bit more elements, I think, from Lupin, but still. Still, actually, overall, the music is mostly Detective Conan. One thing to talk about with this film is, again, like I said, this is. The story that is presented in this movie is actually a continuation of the story from the 2009 television special where. Detective Conan, Richard, and Rachel, they ended up going to another country. Well, not another country, but another country was coming to Japan to showcase their new queen. Their old queen had been assassinated by, apparently by her son who committed suicide. And there's apparently this special crystal deep in that country that can, like, change war because it... and this comes into play in the plot as well. That, like, allows great stealth. Like, it's undetected by electronics or anything. And so it allows people can, like, hide stuff. And it can also cause EMPs. And, like, enough of it can, like, change, like, the power of certain countries. Which is definitely a more Lupin the Third type of element. And... Mind you, you see clips from that special in the end credits. One thing they do at the end is, again, the Lupin theme is first, and they show that special. And then when they play the Detective Conan theme, they are showing clips that sort of go back over what happened in this movie. So I'm gathering most of my information on what happened in that movie from there. Though I have read the synopsis. So it is a continuation of that. And again, we'll get more into plot when we get to story. But the reason I bring it up here is that with the movie, that... For everything I read about the movie, that was more of sort of... Like, Lupin the Third franchise took the lead with that. Like, that was more of a Lupin the Third type of story. This story in this movie is more of a Detective Conan story where there's multiple plots moving here or there. You don't know how they connect. You don't know who did it, though. If you watch the movie and you see the letter and everything, your first guess is actually pretty accurate about who did it. But there's, like, deeper stuff beyond that. And that's, again, that's classic Detective Conan. So, because of that, musically, Detective Conan music sort of takes over, and so in general, it's this blend, like I said, Detective Conan, or just when Conan and Jeter, because I need to find my place, because, like, I just went on a ride, and I'm like, I went all the way over there, and now I need to figure out how to get back to here to where I was going. But, like, when Conan and Jigen are sitting at the bar, it is more comedic, and it has sounds and elements that are more from the Lupin, the third series, but the more there's a serious tone underlying in the music. That is Detective Conan. And again, it's this thing where we're blending the two franchises, melding it, fusing it, as you will, together. And it just makes for a unique sound. Because there's a bit of jazz, but there's a bit of smoothness to it. It's not as high hot jazz as like Lupin the Third. It's more smooth. I think another perfect example of this is a scene where Fujiko and Shirley, Shirley, by the way, is sort of the, is again, the other person who got drunk. I believe that's what, I'm not going back to my notes, because that was the different notes. But what makes it work is, again, you have sort of the Fujiko, but there's sort of an underlying to it that is distinctively Detective Conan. The thing that is about this music is, I'm talking as somebody who knows these franchises and knows their sounds and can actually hear those notes because I've heard them before. So if you're a fan of these franchises by any means, you're going to hear that stuff. It gives you familiarity and makes those scenes work better. At the same time, for somebody who's maybe not seen these franchises and may be new to this, it's still a very creative, unique sound that makes the scenes work. And that's the other thing that I like about the music, is that despite the sort of undertones that denote which franchise, the music in each scene works. Like, there are comedic music during sort of the comedic scenes, more dramatic music in sort of dramatic scenes and so on, as you would expect. But again, it's how they're played. The music, again, is never overbearing. It never overtakes the scene. It enhances the scene as music is supposed to properly do. And it's fun music. This is definitely, it's not just that it does its job well, it's also music that's fun to listen to. It adds to the scene. It's not that it just enhancing the scene, it's also, does it add something to the scene? And the music definitely also adds something very much to the scene. I mean, there are movies that where the music enhances the scene, and then there's music that enhances and adds. This is music that enhances and adds to the scene, whatever emotion you're supposed to be feeling for those scenes. Let's talk about, and move on to animation. And again, talking here, we're talking about the blending of animation here. And again, you have very two unique styles. You have Oyama's style and you have Monkey Punch's style. And again, I'm looking at a picture here just for reference. You know, the real big difference that you see automatically when you see the two styles together, like you see Yupon's cast and you see Detective Conan's cast, of course, Detective Conan, they have bigger eyes, where, again, Lupin does have the big eye, but, like, they're more sort of, like, circular and everything, whereas, Detective Conan has the more, like, sort of, like, when you think of anime, you think of the big eyes, like, Detective Conan is, like, a great example of that, but they still work really, really together, and, you know, with the Lupin the Third crew, you have sort of the more bold line work, in particular with the clothing. Detective Conan is a bit more thinner. But all in all, the way they blend the artwork, like, I guess it comes to the non-traditional cast characters. Like, I'm talking about, like, non-recurring characters. Like, who are the characters that are new to it? And we're talking about the Alan Smiths, we're talking about the Emilio, the Claudias, Lucarios, They're done well, and again, it's this nice blend. It's like they sort of have the facial features of like Lupin, but the line work and overall styling of Detective Conan. And again, it's the fusion of the two sort of art styles to make it blend and fuse, so it feels like this all can exist in the same world. So that's extremely well done. Again, I love the character designs. These are iconic character designs at this point. There's a reason that, again, they've lasted so long, and that's because the character designs are extremely well done. You know, again, Lupin the Third, he has the classic red coat. You know, it's the sort of iconic, you know, of all of the Lupin the Third coat. I mean, there's a huge battle. What do you prefer? Do you prefer the green coat or the red coat? I'm more of a red coat, because I think that was really the first one I saw. And I have no problem with the green coat or the blue coat that he's wearing in the new series. I just want to say this. Lupin the Third, I think, looked good in any color coat. He's even had a pink coat. I'm fine with that. The pink coat was in the third season. I love, and again, you have all the other traditional lines, you know, Zenigata's in his classic trench coat and everything. Goemon in his sort of traditional samurai garb that he's always wore. Jigen, Archer, well. Fujiko has many different outfits. I think the outfit they have her wear here works really well. Gold and purple really complement her design, I think, color-wise, so that's really well done. And then, with the Case Closed character, pretty much the clothes they wore, or at least the picture I'm looking at. But also, they wear other clothes and change, and all the other outfits they wear work really, really well. And then, of course, surely, by the end of the movie, of course, Conan's in his traditional outfits, sort of suit and bow tie and everything, and they just, he looks suave and debonair and everything. It just, even as, like, this little kid, and it's just, like, the thing that really makes the Detective Conan Egawa character design work so well is there's a certain amount of swag that Oyama put into the design. That works really, really well. And that's the best way I've described it, is swag. Conan's got swag. Conan Edogawa is the Shinsuke Nakamura. It's a wrestling reference, by the way, of anime characters. I'm just putting it out there. Or at least of detective anime characters. Some might say that's Lupin, but, you know. Again, that's why these characters work so well. They both got swag. That word's been used a lot, hasn't it? The action animation is wonderful. All of the action scenes are extremely well done. Like, the opening action sequence chase, where Lupin the Third, who is dressed up as the Kato Kid, or the Kid as he's called, because he's stealing a jewel because, you know, just to prove that he can do it better than him because, you know, Fujiko, who's been captured. Surprise. To get Lupin to take the case. Mind you, she's captured, but you don't know is she captured and in on it or not. Because, again, that's the thing about Fujiko is, you know, I made mention to her being captured earlier, and it is getting somewhat in the story, but it's like, is she captured, or did she allow herself to be captured, and she's going to double-cross everybody in the end, and she's working it. But she's able to get his blood boiling by, say, Kid, which leads to a very funny thing we'll talk about later. Because it is a great scene. It's like, this is a kid's movie. Okay. We're not going to turn this into a Limp Bizkit song. No, we are not. But what we're going to talk about is the action scene. The opening action scene. I have to, like, bring it all back, folks. Just a great action scene from front to back when Lupin continues to chasing along the water, chasing the boat, chasing the car. Of course, ultimately, Goemon had beaten one to come out. And once he cuts that board, it's like Lupin, not Lupin, but Conan, automatically, like, wait a minute, there's only one thing that could cut this board. And, like, I now know who this is. And it's like, it just sets everything up. But the action scenes are well done. They all build off each other. Every sort of unique action sequence is unique, whether it be Lupin's bank heist and the more comedic and definitely taking more elements from the Lupin the Third franchise as for part of that action sequence where everybody's chasing and it's like there's a Lupin over here, there's a Lupin over here, you've got a Lupin, you've got a Lupin, everybody's got a Lupin, and apparently the creators of this movie had been watching Oprah. I guess this is just that's not a bad thing. But yeah, so that works, and that takes more of the Lupin elements. Then you have sort of the, you know, where they have to save Emilio from falling, along with Rachel from falling, and it's like Conan and Jigen working together, and that the way they use the action sequence there, like, straight out of Conan. So, like, and again, in those two instances, those action sequences take place during the more, those characters, sort of part of the story. Like, the part of the story the bank heist happens in is more of the Lupin story. The scene at the tower is more of the Detective Conan story. And then, again, like I said, the beginning chase and also the final action sequences, the shootout, the chase of the plane, what happens in the plane. All of that is more a blend of the two franchises. And again, I keep using it because that's the important part here. It's like, you don't want any one series to feel like it's being considered more important than the other. You want to blend. And obviously, like I said, there is essence of more detective. And again, mind you, I don't think this is something also to talk that if you've not seen the franchise, you would notice. I mean, I'm talking, of course, as somebody who's seen both franchises. And I'm talking from an element of knowing what it is, so I can see that it's a bit more Detective Conan, but it's blended really well that if you've not seen any of these franchises, this is your introduction, you wouldn't know which is which. You wouldn't know what parts are from Lupin the Third, you wouldn't know what parts are from Detective Conan, and that's a great thing because it allows you to be introduced evenly to both franchises, which is ultimately the plan with any crossover. Is that if you're doing like a crossover movie of two well-established franchises, you want that to ultimately end with the person at the end of the movie saying, wow, that was a great movie. I'm interested in both characters. Let me go on the internet and look up these characters and find out more information. Oh, they have stuff on Hulu. Let me watch some of their older stuff on Hulu. That's the overall plan that you hope will happen. Again, the key word is hope. So, with the action sequences here, again, that great blend of both elements. And background and special effects are done extremely well. The locations are very unique. Whether it be Tokyo Tower, whether it be, of course, the shopping district they're in, the canal, the airport. Do a great job, I think, of taking you to unique, what, or at least what makes places feel unique to an urban, not just an urban setting, but also an urban setting that you might be familiar with, especially as anime fans. Like, we may feel like we're very familiar with Tokyo, but it feels like they're taking us to places we may have not been to in Tokyo. Even when they're taking us to Tokyo Tower, they make it all feel unique, and that's a great job with the background. And the backgrounds just look beautiful. Like, just the work, the line work is just gorgeous. The colors are really well done. The backgrounds just pop off the screen. And again, they do a great job of making it feel like, oh my god, I'm looking down from the tower and I can go over there and explore any part of there. And I really want to explore over there. And of course, the special effects, there's rain, smoke, and everything. Done extremely well. Again, do a great job of enhancing action scenes and important scenes as well. So that's it for the animation. Both music and animation are extremely well done. With that, it's time for a break. And when we come back, we are going to get into acting and into story. So let's take a break. I'm going to go practice Japanese names so I don't brutalize them. And we'll be right back, folks, after these messages.
these messages. We'll be right back.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here with a trailer for an exciting series of episodes of Views from the Long Box. To help me with this trailer, I have brought along none other than Darth Vader.
What is thy bidding, my master?
I had to pay extra for that one. Now, normally on Views, I talk about comics, either alone or with a friend. However, with The Force Awakens hitting theaters soon, I have been all excited for Star Wars. And with the sudden massive amount of free time I have found myself with, I decided to devote all of the December episodes of Views to Star Wars in a series I am calling
Views from a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Oh, that's kind of rude. I mean, I would think a Dark Lord of the Sith would be happy that I'm devoting a month of shows to Star Wars.
Don't make me destroy you.
Look, Vader, we had a deal. I was going to tell everybody about how I'm going to talk about my favorite Star Wars movies, my favorite characters and comics and toys, in addition to talking about The Force Awakens. You were supposed to back me up on this.
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Well, fine then. Can I at least talk about how I'm bringing some of the best and brightest in podcasting along with me on this endeavor? And that the show is going to be weekly through the month of December?
The Emperor does not share your optimistic appraisal of the situation.
The Emperor will be listening? Yeah. Then I will have to double my efforts.
Apology accepted.
I did an apo- You know what? Never mind. What everybody needs to know is that
Views from a Galaxy Far, Far Away
starts December 1st here at Views from the Long Box. You can find the show on iTunes or by going to www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Finally, you stuck to the script.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Views from a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
Starting December 1st. Only at Views from the Long Box.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo! Anida!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazer!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood cools off, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
And welcome back, and let's get right into the acting, which means, of course, it's time to take a rundown of our cast list. Something I probably shouldn't even mention at the beginning of this review is that this movie has not been dubbed. So this is a subtitled movie. It is currently available on Hulu, where you can watch it. That's how I watched it. But as such, it's subtitled only, which means I'm doing Japanese names, to which, once again, it's time for our rousing game of Thomas Brutalizes the Japanese Language and Japanese Names. To my good friend Kyle Yount, I'm sorry. I did practice these, so we're going to see how much I remember and if I'm going to stutter in, like, fear. Again, I apologize. This is my fault. Kanichi Kurita as Lupin III, Miname Takayama as Konan Agawa, Wakana Yamazaki as Rain Mori, Kiyoshi Kabayashi as Daisuke Jigen, Megumi Hayashibara as Habara, Rikiyama Koyama as Kogoro Mori, Daisuke Namikawa as Goemon Ishikawa the 13th, Miyuki Sawashiro as Fujiko Mime, Koichi Yamadari as Koichi Zanigawa, Kapi Yamaguchi as Kieto Koraba, Kienchi Ogata as Professor Hiroshi Agasawa, Xiafuin as Juzo Meguri, Wataru Taki as Wataru Takagi, Iku, I believe it's pronounced Atani, Mitsuhiko. Let me say that again. Mitsuhiko Subaraya. Yukiko Awai as Ayumi Yoshida. As you can see, there are some names like I've pronounced. I've heard them before, and I know how to pronounce them by heart. Going down to the last people, Miyu Arino as Amelia Barakiri. See, it's hard enough to have Japanese name. Now you gotta throw in Italian names. It's hard for me. Tetsu Kanako as... I completely butchered that one. Lucario Carnival. Natsuna
as Claudia and Seo Uchino as Alan Smith. Again, I apologize for the complete butchering of the names. Now that we've had our fun, you're done laughing at how horrible I did. As far as, let's start off with protagonist acting, and I love the acting all around. And when we say protagonists, in this case, I'm saying both groups and the antagonists are the guys who ultimately were behind everything. So the protagonists, as far as those performing Lupin and Conan and the others, did a wonderful job. It's like those characters were straight out of their franchises. They did bring in the actors who actually do those characters. And so, like, they nailed them perfectly. I mean, Lupin, I do believe, has had, like, multiple actors over the years. But I believe this one, as I look him up, Ed did Lupin the Third over the, for the majority of his time. He started, the one who did, he'd been doing Lupin since 95. So, like, these are, like, long-time actors. They understand these characters. They know their nuances. They know everything. And they're able to perform them perfectly. And so it's, like, it definitely, that's one of the strengths of this movie. Is, again, you have all these established voice actors who know these characters. They've lived these characters. I do believe the Conan actress is, it's the original voice actress for Conan. Who, by the way, just to establish, at 2005 ended up marrying the actual creator of Detective Conan. So, yeah, kind of knows something about Conan. We're just establishing that. And I'm laughing about it. I don't know why. I think the reason, though, I am laughing is because it is a strength, as far as the acting is concerned, that you have all these original voice actors for this crossover who still do the voices, mind you, in their individual series and movies and everything. So they know the nuances of the character. So, you know, there's little nuances here and there in a scene where they act a certain way. It's just like, oh my God, that's Striano. How he does it here and this here. And again, it's all blend to work together. One, I think the key things that works here is there is a magic, there is sort of a connection, a chemistry between Kurita and Takayama, who do Lupin and Conan, and the way they work really well together. Just the way those characters seem to play off each other, just it's nailed perfectly in sort of that. These two extremely intelligent individuals sort of having more of a mental and psychological battle with each other, more than really a physical battle, trying to, you know, being who can get two steps ahead of the other. You know, it's like Conan has vowed that he is going to capture Lupin the Third, and Lupin the Third says that he's going to remain out of his grasp. And basically, for both to do it, they gotta be like two, three, even four steps ahead of them. At the same time, Conan trying to remain true to his principles of like not having anybody killed or anything like that. And so it all works really well. Again, this is getting more into the story, but again, it's that chemistry that makes that part of the story work. And then the other characters and the way they interact with each other. You know, like I said, Jigen and Goemon and Fujiko are like all straight out of how they've acted in past series and in past movies. Conan's cast is straight, you know, Rachel and all of them are straight. Again, they're voice actors. So the original cast, I think maybe is a better way to say it than protagonists. All the original cast does a great job with their characters. They nail them. They're perfect. If there was a weakness in the acting, though, it's the non-original. It's the, you know, it's Emilio. It's, I mean, Emilio is fine, but, like, the villains, you know, Lucario and Alan Smith, it's... The issue isn't that their acting is bad, it's... And this may be more in the way the character is written. But the way they are, I guess, told to play the character, it's just like, I never felt like these characters were endangered. Or, I should say, dangerous. You know, it's... I never at one point felt, just from the performance, like, this guy feels like he's dangerous, like he's a real danger to... Like, I gotta be careful, what is this guy planning? You know? Even when it gets a bit more threatening, like when he has Conan, like, I'll shoot the kid. It's like, he was trying to play sort of maybe more of like a Bond-esque villain, but it just didn't work. It's like, he was too, you know, that's what, it was too calm. Like, and I guess the scene that really nailed it for me is like, he has Conan and like all his plans have gone awry, and he's, they're having him try to play sort of this Bond-esque villain who's like there for his country, but he never felt like a bad guy. And I understand that sort of that's the idea, is that he wasn't really bad, he was doing it for his country, but the way he's going about it, was wrong, and he was embracing it, and it's just, he never felt like a threat. He never felt, and more importantly, it never felt like he was a challenge for Conan and Lupin. And I'll get to that back into a second, because it is, I think, a flaw in this movie. Or at least in its story, which we'll get to in a second. And then the others, it's just... You know, for instance, you're supposed to care about Emilio. I don't know if I just from the acting, they made me feel like they were important enough. It's like, they're there, and it's just like, here's something that they're doing, so we can get back to what we do want to see, which is Conan and Lupin, and really trying to figure out how these two plots blend together, which they do really well, but again, like I said, there's a flaw, and, you know, in saying that, why don't we get to story? Because it is important to talk about what the story does well first, which is, they do a great job of the overall plot and juggling these two different plot threads to bring them together, which is definitely a more of a Detective Conan element. Like multiple plot threads and then it coming together at the end of the episode or the movie for the climax. That's a really big Detective Conan element. Like, Lupin the Third, it's... And mind you, they do that in the special, but still, Lupin the Third is really a lot more straightforward. Like, everything connects more into each other. And, you know, and that's being sort of more traditional heist type of storylines. But with Lupin the Third, there's definitely multiple thread lines going through it. And so you gotta juggle those, make them both feel important, and ultimately combine them at the end. That's what they do with this movie, that done really well, because you have Lupin's story, you have Conan's story, that both seemingly are completely ignorant and as far away from each other as can, but they seem to diverge on connecting people that makes it work. And in that sense, it does make it work. They do a great job of juggling it. Each storyline showcases the strength of each character, and which is ultimately what each plot was supposed to do. The death threat storyline for Conan was supposed to show his detective skills and how he was skilled as a detective and showcase some of his gadgets. To showcase why he's a formidable foe for Lupin. Lupin's story, his bank heist and him trying to track and figure out what Alan Smith is up to while trying to say Fujiko, who thinks she's going to double-cross and gets double-crossed at the end. Because she thinks it's fake. It's not. But we'll get to that whole thing worked out in a second. Because that goes into the comedic beats. That's all, like, that sort of heist, cross, double-cross sort of thing that it instantly connects you to who Lupin the Third is and shows you cases his strengths as he's trying to figure things out. And then they get to the point to where they're starting to meld, and they... I like the way they pace the melding, the blending of the plots. Because through... particularly through comedic beats, and particularly through, you know, the Junior Detective League figuring out where Lupin is. Like, we're going to show Conan, and we're going to be proactive and get to it. And so that starts the blend. And ultimately, when it comes together, it works really well. Ultimately, though, the flaw with the entire plot as a whole, though, does come down to the villains. And it's just that they never feel like a threat. And I don't mean a threat like they're deadly. Like, this is a kid's show, and, you know, ultimately you want to show that, you know, while being dangerous, there was a reason they weren't complete bad guys. They were bad guys, but not completely bad guys. Which is sort of a thing in Conan, to where, you know, when the person is found out, it's like, this is why I did it. This is what this person did to me, and I couldn't take it anymore, so I murdered it. That type of thing. That thing that makes you feel sympathetic for the characters. And I think that the key word here is, it's not that I feel sympathetic for the main antagonists in this. It's just that they never feel like a threat to who Conan and Lupin the Third is. It's like, they've faced villains in movies and everything to where, like, oh my god, how is Lupin or how is Conan going to overcome this character? Like, they do a great job of making them feel like a threat. Even though you know they will overcome in the end, it's, my god, they feel like such a threat. How are they going to overcome them? Alan Smith never feels like that threat. He never feels like he's a challenge intellectually for Conan or for Lupin. It's almost as if, like, you know what, it's a bad triple threat match. I'm going to put it in wrestling terms because, again, I'm a wrestling fan the best way I know. The best triple threat matches are where you have three wrestlers of equal strength and they all bring something to the table and they all feel a threat. But even if you have somebody that's necessarily considered the weak link of the three, that overall they are a threat because of the way they know how to work. Usually that's a heel that is a little bit more slimy and he's going to steal the victory. And so you feel like he is a threat in that point. At no point here in this sort of triple threat match that's going on, doesn't really feel like a triple threat match at all, actually. And that's, I think, the point is, like, this is there's a battle going on between Lupin and Conan, and sort of Alan Smith's storyline, though having being basically the reason they ultimately are all here in the first place, doesn't feel as if it's an important part of the story. It's like, it feels more like it's a distraction getting in the way of their storyline, and they're just happening to solve it along the way. And so it's the off element to the story. And it does hurt it, because I think this is a really good movie. I dare even say kind of great, but not completely great. Because ultimately, as great as this movie is, I think the one thing that's missing from to make it almost perfect is that great villain that does feel like a threat. Like, I think they could have made a sympathetic villain, but I think they could have made him sympathetic and made him feel more like a threat. And maybe that has a lot to do with, again, I've not seen that television special. Maybe there's an introduction to what this country is. Because they are sort of mysterious about who the country is. Which country or whatnot is doing this. I think the implication is that the country that used to maybe control Vespa, which is the other country... from the country from the 2009 special, that maybe Vespa has now gotten control of, or that they're from Vespa. I think they did actually say they are from Vespa, but again, it's just that Alan Smith never felt like He felt like he was in the way, and that's maybe the best way to put it. I mean, Lucario was sort of your, more of your Lupin the Third villain. Like, he was just playing greedy, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna do this, and I'm just gonna, and he ultimately gets his end. But again, it's not like he was a threat. He was a fat, greedy guy. It's like, you know, you'll never take me away, Copper, except that you're gonna lose your life as you fly at the plane window. Again, spoilers. It's frustrating, because I was like, I wish Alan Smith felt like more of a threat. Like, and they do a great job starting off, I would like to say. They do a great job of starting off, like, showing him sort of matching wits with Lupin. But they don't complete it. It's like, I never felt like Conan was in danger when he got captured. I felt like he was more endangered from being accidentally shot than from Alvin Smith. And like I said, they started off great with him matching wits with Lupin, taking advantage of Fujiko, thinking that she's going to double-cross them, knowing what's going to happen. Only for it to then turn out that every information he'd been given about Lupin had been given to him by Lupin. All in this mysterious plan by Lupin to find out where these crystals are. And that sort of undercuts him also as a villain. So, like, he's not really a villain. He's a pawn of Lupin who's being used by Lupin to find out where these crystals are for his own mission as part of helping this tomboy queen. Which, by the way, the thing with the special is that the tomboy queen of Vespa, the princess who is now becoming queen, looks exactly like Rachel. And so they ended up exactly like, well, I've escaped and now I run into you, so you take my spot and I'm going to take yours and I'm going to enjoy life and you go be in danger. Like, what? Wait, where'd you go? God damn it! That type of plot. So, as part of a promise and a favor for the queen, he's helping her hunt down these crystals that have been, like, that have been taken from the country, because they can be a great threat. So again, yeah, just the villain, that's the ultimately unfortunate problem of the overall plot, is that the villains are completely undercut. They never feel like a threat. Maybe that's the case. Maybe the case is like showing Lupin as the ringleader that organized all of this just to find these crystals. It does show his intelligence, but at the same point in time, it does undercut, and I think the movie would have worked better if there was a overlying villain that felt like he could put both Conan and Lupin in danger. It's that idea, like, they're trying to hunt each other down, but here's this force that's now jumped into their battle, and now they've got to combine to take them out. And it just, and maybe I think that's done a lot more in, again, that special, which I keep signaling, which I definitely want to watch one day. By the way, these are also available on DVD from Discotech. I think the other element, like I said, is with that blending of the story, there is more Detective Conan's, like, it's the who did it, you know, the figuring out, the reveal and everything, as that finale goes along, that Detective Conan does. So that's definitely more from Lupin, and that's done extremely well. I think another thing that, though, makes the series really work, I've kind of made mention to, and I kept saying I'm going to get to, is the more comedic bits. And again, one thing that both franchises do really well is they both use comedy really well to integrate the stories in a fun, exciting way that makes them interesting to watch and engages you as a viewer to want to continue watching. Whether it be Lupin's heist, where the chasing to where, you know, he's putting Lupin the Third masks on everybody and they're chasing everybody around and he's causing mass chaos. Whether it be the Junior Detective League, who's like, with their puns and everything, and we're going to find, and somehow they do figure out where Lupin the Third's hideout is. And they, it is very funny to, like, apparently the Junior Detective League figured out sort of the secret names that both Jigen and Goemon use to, like, put jewels in certain places. And, man, it's like, Lupo's like, you know, oh, God, that sucks. Like, Jigen and Goemon wrapped their minds to come up with those names. It's like, they kids even figured it out. Which is pretty... To me, that doesn't make me laugh. But I love that scene to where, you know, they do it several times where people are getting phone calls and it's like, you know, it's a connecting of the plot. But in particular, the one where Conan and Jigen are in the hotel lobby. And of course, they're getting calls. Conan gets a call from Shelly. Jigen gets a call from Goemon. And it's basically they're revealing that the kids are there. And of course, Lupin's pointing like, you. It's like, it ain't my fault. And then, of course, the way they act to Goemon, it's like, please, have these sweets. There's nothing wrong. And, of course, they're whispering about it, like, you know we can probably hear you, right? Like, oh, dear God. Let me get tea. And, of course, the kids are asleep. Towards then, Lupin comes out. And he's going to, like, check them, just like what stuff they has on them. And of course, the first thing that like Goemon does is like, you're a sick fuck. Like, what? Why do you immediately think I'm gonna do something horrible to the little girl? Why? What is wrong with you? Do you not see the Nookie I chase? Which, by the way, speaking of the Nookie, again. Another great introduction to an element of Lupin the Third, which is this mother effer right here does all these things around the world for that Fujiko Nookie and can't get none. I mean, can't get none. And I love that scene on a comedic sense because it works so well and it really engages you. It makes you feel sympathetic for the character. It's painted, it's funny painted, and again, it's how comedy works. You know, where, you know, Lupin's there and he's basically scolding Fujiko after the exchange, like, you know, showing her video, like, you thought you could double cross, but I'm not mad at that part. I'm not even mad at the part that got captured and thought you could double cross me. It's the fact that he's like, And the video is just like, you should go get it. Well, maybe not you. Maybe I can call Kid. Like, Kid? Who's the one who always comes to save you? Ding dong. It's like, oh no, I still have the bomb strapped to my neck. Like, you could die. It's like, I can't think of a better way to go out. Time to dive in! And then it kind of comes off and it's classic punch. Where, by the way, Fujiko hides this huge spring contrapted punching glove. I don't know. There are a lot of adult jokes I could make right now. I'm trying really desperately to keep it PG, even though I may have blubbed on a curse word here or there. But yeah, there's this class loop on the third, and it does help embrace what the character is. It makes you laugh, and it connects you to the kids. Same thing with the Junior Detective League. It makes you embrace the Junior Detective League as an important element of the film. It makes it work. I mean, final thoughts is this is a really, really good, I dare even say great movie. I want to be fair because there are other movies where I've harped on a major flaw. I mean, this is a great movie. It's very enjoyable. It's fun. I mean, at the end of the day, that was the objective of the movie, was to showcase Lupin and Detective Conan, and they do that really well. It's just, it's that one fatal flaw of any movie, whether it's great or not. And in this case, the fatal flaw, I think, for this movie was that it was lacking a bigger, more important, more dangerous villain. And again, I think they could have had that and still showed the character to be sympathetic for some reason or not. Ultimately, it's what it's missing, but it doesn't take away from the fact that there's two ways, depending on what your knowledge of the movie is. If you are a fan of any of these franchises, or even both, You will love this movie, regardless of what the villain is. Because it is just a celebration of both franchises. It blends and fuses them perfectly together. And it's like you want to see more of these two characters facing off. I know I do. On that other hand, if you're somebody who doesn't know these franchises, has no knowledge of these franchises, and it's your first introduction, this movie is a great introduction to both franchises. It tells you the elements that make both franchises great. It showcases the main characters wonderfully as great, strong characters. It showcases their supporting cast in great ways that tell you everything you need to know about them. And I think this movie is a great way to sort of introduce people to both these franchises. I do wish, at least for an American audience, that there was a dub so that, you know, an American audience would be more willing, because for those who maybe aren't anime fans or anything, that you're showing these movie to get into this franchises, want more of a dub. But still, I think if you're talking to any anime fan who doesn't know these franchises and you're showing them this as their first introduction to both these franchises, this is a great movie to show to get them into those franchises. And at the end of the day, isn't that what a crossover is supposed to do? It's a crossover is supposed to celebrate franchises while also, in essence, in a way, being a great jumping on point to make people want to investigate these franchises more. And that's what this movie does. You know, I think my wishing for a better villain might be... It might. I mean, I do think it's a... honest to God, respectable and fair assessment. But at the same point in time, I'd also wonder and think if maybe that's just because, again, I know the franchises. But still, I think it's a fair assessment. Even with it's still a great film. So, at the end of the day, I'd give Lupin the Third versus Detective Conan, the movie from 2013, a 4 out of 5. It's really solid. It's really fun to watch. And even if you're not going to get into these franchises or anything, it's just a fun, enjoyable movie to watch, I think. So, 4 out of 5 for me. And that's it for this episode of Tom Prerogative. Remember, there are separate ways to contact the show. If you have any emails or comments that you want to send us, that, of course, includes sending us email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network. And, of course, you can leave a comment right here on the website at www.an.132productions.com. Make sure you come to www.an.132productions.com for all the other content right here on the Absolution Network, from Shin Tiger Curl to myself. Shin Tiger has his Raw review videos, his pay-per-view reviews, wrestling news, One Piece readings. I have my CM Juice Wrestling Reviews, my Tokyo SOS Hexcast, which I'm going to start bringing over here soon, among other things. So all of that and more. Of course, Tom's Tsunami D&D, check that out as well. And of course, make sure you check out all our friends that are right there on the sidebar of the site. We play promos for them. Check them out. They do great work as well. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to finish January out with yet another look at a beloved Toonami classic. Last time out, on episode 124, we looked at G Gundam. At episode 126, we're going back to the mech series. Well, not the Gundam mech series, but we're going back to the mech genre. Because we're going to take a look at a little series that nobody had known about, a franchise nobody knew about, that exploded onto the scene with nothing but a white liger. That's right. Next week, we review Zoid Zero. So until next time. What? my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay gold here.
Desert. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.